Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Otto Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Welcome, everyone, to Homeopathy World Community on Blog Talk Radio. This is Debbie Brook, the founder of Homeopathy World Community, a social network for homeopaths and healers. It is open to read all of the articles. There are thousands of articles about health and healing. And it is open to anyone on the internet to read them, study, learn, and glean information. We are talking today about influenza. Dr. Adil Kasim will be back with us in February. He has given a big workshop and has a lineup of obligations for the month of January. And he is always an exciting speaker, a guru of sorts, and I'm going to try and fill the space with some important information, breaking news that is constantly coming on to our awareness in the news. So let me check in. I'm going to put on the chat now, which was not on until this moment, and we're going to be talking about influenza. That is because we are hearing about an epidemic today, and I'm not sure whether it is occurring around the world, but in the United States, we're getting many, many messages, and I also have some breaking news about how to care for yourself and what the scientists and medical field are telling us specifically about how to boost your immunity. And that means what they're asking us to do is take steps so that we remain healthy and don't succumb to attack by germs, whether it's virus or bacteria or even fungus or contagious epidemic type of disease that spreads easily through the mucous membranes. When somebody sneezes or coughs, we are getting the message to, if you are the person who is not feeling well, sneeze into your sleeve instead of spraying out into the entire room, which might contaminate the space. And for those who perhaps have a weakened immune system, could easily catch the disease. And we're hearing a lot of fearful messages that persons, especially young persons, teens and children who are supposedly in very good health are now getting sick and even dying from the secondary infection of after their immune system is weakened more from the disease. And so I wanted to send out a message to everybody on Homeopathy World Community to thank them for participating in all of our broadcasts, whether it is the Health In on Monday, the Wednesday show with Dr. Adil Thursday. We're going to have a big lineup with Greg Glazer, constitutional lawyer, about tyranny and the law. And that's Thursday at noon in the Eastern United States. Obviously, 3 hours later in or earlier in the morning on the West Coast, and in the evening about 9:30 or 10 in India for those folks who are across the ocean. And I appreciate everybody who communicates with us by sending in your questions and comments and putting it on Facebook or making a tweet on Twitter to let other people know we're having a show at that time and for everybody to join us. So we're going to get in right into today's breaking news about influenza. And this comes from an article on the New York Times that they're telling us we can possibly boost the effects of a influenza injection, a shot, by doing exercise. At the same time, we are getting a lot of mixed messages and confusing messages as to the effectiveness of the shot, the flu shot, to begin with. We're learning that the flu vaccine blocks infection a wide range, 50 to 70% of the time. Well, that's quite a large range. And who are they talking about? And how do they gather this information? We're going to talk a little bit more in depth with that. Dr. Tony Bark has put up an article explaining a little bit of how they gather this information and how they create the statistics behind the numbers that you're hearing. And how do you, as a consumer, take in these messages? What do these statistical numbers mean to you? If you're going to undergo a surgical procedure and the doctor tells you you have a 50% chance, a 50% chance that this is going to help you, or a 50% chance that this is going to not be effective. I guess that's what they're saying. Or what if it's 50% chance that it could actually be detrimental to your health? What do all of these numbers mean? You have to be a critical thinker and read behind the message as a consumer of these products. Read all of the information and not in a narrow stream of information of just what one authority is telling you. And who do you consider to be the authority? And I want to thank the listeners. Lisa, if you're listening, I'm talking about the information that we're reading in the mass media concerning influenza. And right now we're getting a brand new message that if you do exercise, I'm not sure whether it is before or after an influenza injection, it's going to improve the efficacy of that injection. First, we get the message that the flu vaccine is only, it says blocks the infection. What does that mean, blocks the infection? Is it a preventative so that you remain healthy and you don't succumb to getting the disease? Well, we know a very large percentage of people who get the injection end up with many of the symptoms of flu, and they are down for a week or 10 days. I don't know what the specifics are, whether that disease symptoms are lingering, which can occur when you have a flu, that perhaps your immune system is strong enough to get over it, but then you might have a lingering cough. And this is something that we've been also hearing about. So I wanted to mention that they give us a range, 50 to 70% of the time, that the flu is, that blocks the infection. That means that 50 to 30% of the time it does not block, in meaning you're going to get the flu anyway. And also it says that the inoculation can gain little protection. And yet, we are constantly getting the message everywhere that we turn, get your flu shot today, because it is the only way that you're going to protect yourself against flu, which to me is misspeak. It is not the complete truth. You're only getting a little bit of information and not all of it. They also talk about the way it protects us through the antibody count in the blood. And we're going to go into a little bit more detail about that when we talk about how our immune system works. But this article about being physically fit, I would say, is actually a positive message. Definitely, we should get out there and move our body. And the more exercise we do, the more we get out into the sunshine, into the air, and we improve all of our bodily functions. We improve our circulation. We boost our endorphins, our feel-good hormones. And overall, we're going to be a stronger individual. How that works in terms of getting the flu injection to be more effective is quite interesting, how they make a correlation between an experiment with sedentary elderly people, a group whose immune systems are typically weakened to the flu vaccine, or respond weakly to the flu vaccine, began their program with a brisk walk or a balance or a stretching routine. Now, any elderly person who does that is going to start to feel good, and they're going to improve their ability to function and even their memory. After 10 months, the walkers had significantly improved their aerobic fitness, and after receiving the flu shots, displayed higher average influenza antibody counts 20 weeks after a flu vaccine compared to the group who hadn't stretched. And so I also want to interject here that the way that studies are done when people talk about double-blind studies, they also need to have a placebo group and really understand what they're giving to the different groups that they're comparing. Are they giving a saline injection? Are they giving another type of a vaccine in the injection to compare to the placebo group? And what would be the effect of comparing this elderly group who had done exercise for 10 months? That's a long time to keep up the exercise, to a group who had not even got the injection at all. That would be a very interesting comparison. Maybe not in antibody count, but what about in coming down with the flu itself? Wouldn't that be interesting? To really broaden the scope of the comparison groups of someone who is getting special care, taking care of themselves, feeling good about themselves, moving their body, getting the exercise, and I'm sure that they probably had a more robust appetite and were eating more properly once they started to get into this routine and probably became more active. So there are a lot of factors that weren't put into the study. So therefore, they're saying that their antibody count improved for this elderly group who usually weakly respond to a flu vaccine. And that is how they tabulated their result and put out the summary. That's great. I think everyone should do the exercise, and that would be a great preventative for all kinds of illness and for improving a person's health. So that experiment involved a year of dedicated exercise training, and this is not easy for a lot of people. So they did another research study with exercise for just It was done at Iowa State University in Ames, Iowa, where young, healthy volunteers, most of them college students, went for a 90-minute jog or a bike ride of 15 minutes after their flu shot. Okay, so now what is the scientist thinking? They're thinking you're going to be pumping the blood and getting the injection to flood into the system. So other volunteers, what did they do? They sat quietly for 90 minutes after their shot. Following that, the researchers checked the blood levels for influenza antibodies a month later. Okay, a month later, so to see what happened. The volunteers who had exercised after being inoculated exhibited nearly double the antibody response of the sedentary group. This was done by Marion Cohout, a professor of kinesiology at Iowa State. And they also had higher blood levels of certain immune system cells that help the body fight off infection. So they also did more studies. Dr. Cohout and Justin Hallam, a graduate student in her lab, repeated the study with lab mice. Some of the mice exercised for 90 minutes on the running wheel, while others ran for either half as much time, 45 minutes, or twice as much, 3 hours, after receiving the flu shot. 4 weeks later, that's a month later again, the animals, like the students, had exercised moderately for 90 minutes, displayed the most robust, and I want to emphasize this, antibody response. So what they're correlating is if your antibody response is up, it means that your immune system has been boosted for better health or resistance to a disease such as specifically influenza. Is this true? Can we make this corollary? Can we say that antibody response is definitely correlated to not getting to a disease? We will learn a little bit more about that. Animals that had run for 3 hours in this study. Let me see where we are here. So animals that had run for 3 hours had fewer antibodies. Okay, so why would that be? Exercising for too long can dampen the immune response. That's interesting. Those who had run for 45 minutes also had less robust response. So they're telling us that a 90-minute workout, that's an hour and a half, is optimal. And I find that quite interesting, and I would like to learn a little bit more about how you can make that conclusion. What if a person was doing over a longer period of time? So they're saying only on a one-shot deal, that the day that you're getting your shot, a certain amount of exercise after the shot is going to be optimal for boosting the immune antibody response. And remember, the antibody response is hypersensitizing your immune system. Unless you work out before you're inoculated, so that's another study. So using a dumbbell where people were pumping their arms, the adult volunteers lifted weights for 20 minutes, several hours before they were scheduled to receive the flu shot, and they focused on the arm that would be injected. They completed multiple sets of bicep curls and sidearm raises, employing a weight that was 85% of the maximum that they could lift one time. Another group did not exercise before their shot. So, again, I like to emphasize the study methodology and comparison groups. What was given? Is it the exact same flu shot? Yes. What would happen if there was a group that didn't get the flu shot and raised and did these exercises and it was a true placebo that they or a a saline solution injection. There are so many different parameters that they can look at to see what the difference is in this vaccine. After 4 weeks, the researchers checked for the influenza antibodies again, and they found that those who had exercised before the shot generally displayed higher antibody levels, although the effect was muted among men who, as a group, had responded to that year's flu vaccine more robustly than the women. So we have a lot of questions in our mind as consumers about the effectiveness of the flu vaccine compared to the potential harm that it can incur in healthy individuals or people who have weakened immune systems. Their conclusion, we think that exercise can help vaccine response by activating parts of the immune system. And so my suggestion is get out there and exercise. It's going to make you feel good overall. If you do it on a regular basis, it's going to help every part of your body, all of your muscles. It's going to tone. It's going to move your circulatory system. You're going to get the endorphins for the feel good for your brain and everything else. So this is really, they're investigating how they could boost somebody's immune system with the exercise pre or post vaccine. So you can make your own conclusions from that. Now we're going to move on to the story that Toni Bark, on her article on flu vaccine and winter flus, that's on www.disease-reversal.com, and she has it for the 2013 winter flu season. And there is a link on the Homeopathy World Community under today's show, January 16, 2013, Health Flu News Facts Media Mass Media Messages. What is she saying? We're going to talk about this, revealing considerable amount of facts that are being told to the public and actual documented recorded data. For many reasons, staff in the hospitals record all the hospitalizations and deaths stemming from respiratory ailments as influenza, instead of separating out the secondary bacterial pneumonia, the RSV, and other pathogens. And to learn a little bit about RSV, I looked it up and found that RSV is a contagious disease that is called respiratory syncytial virus. It's a respiratory virus that infects the lungs and the breathing passages. Most otherwise healthy people recover from RSV infection in 1 to 2 weeks. Typically, you think about a cold, you have it for 7 to 10 days. However, infection can be severe in some people, such as certain infants, young children, and older adults. In fact, RSV is the most common cause of bronchiolitis, the inflammation of the small airways in the lungs, and pneumonia in children under 1 year of age in the United States. In addition, RSV is more often being recognized as an important cause of respiratory illness in older adults. The symptoms of RSV are so much like flu or any other cold. You can have a fever, reduced appetite, runny nose, cough, and wheezing. In older children and adults, you can also have the runny nose and a sore throat, a headache and a cough, and a general feeling of sickness. So it really sounds very much like flu, but it can lead to serious illness such as pneumonia or bronchiolitis in children and adults. So we're talking now about inflammation. The transmission is of RSV is when an infected person coughs or sneezes, sending the respiratory droplets into the air. This is the same way that flu spreads or other contagious disease spreads. These droplets contain the RSV and can end up in other people's mouths or noses. And so you're talking about the spread of infection. The droplets can land on objects that people touch, such as toys or countertops. People can be exposed to and possibly infected by the RSV by touching these objects and then touching their mouths and noses. And that's why you hear cautions not to be taking your hands and touching around your face and around your lips, or when you blow your nose. You know, you need to constantly wash your hands if you're around these kinds of people who have been coughing or sneezing, or if you're in a crowded room. You need to wash your hands before you're eating or wash your hands before you're touching your face. Children often pass the virus to one another when they're at school or daycare center. The cautions for contagious disease is to cover your mouth and nose when you're coughing or sneezing. Wash your hands with regular soap, not antibacterial soap, because antibacterial soap is going to start to cause the resistant strains of these viruses and bacteria to increase. So that's why you really need to use regular soap on a daily basis. Avoid sharing cups and eating utensils with others. And you know that your kids are sharing stuff at school, so let them know that they could be getting a disease by doing that. And the other one is to refrain from kissing others. And isn't it a joy to meet your friend who you haven't seen very often, or even if you see them very often, you might give a hug and a kiss to each other. So they're saying during times of epidemic contagious disease, refrain from doing that and just smile at each other and say, you know, put your hands up in front and say, you know, I'm not feeling exactly perfect health. Let them know that you're protecting them. Or say, if you see somebody else who is sneezing and coughing, say, you know, I don't want to get sick. I know it's a little bit awkward, but it's something that we can all do. And I want to thank all of our guests for tuning in today. I appreciate the listeners. Okay, regarding a vaccination for this RSV, there is not any vaccination. And children at high risk for the serious disease can get, if you're really not have a low immune system, there's a monthly shot called palivizumab and MOB, and that's I guess the brand name for that particular shot of, it's a humanized monoclonal antibody. It's a recombinant DNA technology that is used for boosting the immune system and, again, boosting those antibodies. And now we're going to go over to the report from Dr. Toni Bark on her article. And for many reasons, as I was saying earlier and veered off to this RSV, the staff at the hospitals record both the hospitalizations and the deaths, and they clump all together the respiratory ailments instead of separating out influenza. And in that case, we're going to get information or statistics, numbers, being told to us that are a little bit higher than are actually the case of specifically influenza. We're not going to hear that a person died from secondary bacterial pneumonia, but we're just going to get the message that we had so many cases of influenza. If you like, you can go to the CDC page on epidemic disease and take a look at the maps and read the statistics on influenza. That way you might get a clearer bit of information and data about the actual numbers of influenza, meaning that the person who came in sick, the patient had a swab and was specifically tested to see that the virus was causing the disease was the strains of this season, 2013 of this year. Tony Bark says the CDC maintains that children are the main hosts and transmitters of influenza. Hence, the statewide mandate for the past several years in New Jersey for all preschool and school-aged children annually. So in the state of New Jersey, they have required all of the children there in those age ranges to get the shot. Could there be something to learn from the Northeast region where the typical range of influenza in vaccinated children matches or exceeds that of neighboring states that do not mandate flu vaccines as vehemently as in the state of New Jersey? We find that the major problem with mandating flu vaccine in healthy young children is the risk to safety ratio. Without having actual double-blind long-term studies, we do not know the actual risk. Even though many parents have claimed damage and won remuneration, they've won their cases from the governmental VAERS, that's the Vaccine Adverse Reporting System. Dr. Tony Bark brings up an interesting point about the marketing of these drugs. She says, quote, "The flu vaccine has never been proven in any study to prevent flu. The term thrown out is a number, some percentage of its efficacy. Efficacy is not effectiveness. Vaccines are the only product the FDA approves and allows to make effectiveness claims without having to prove effectiveness. They only have to show efficacy or antibody response rate." So this is what I was talking about earlier in the show when they did all of these studies for boosting the effectiveness, or really the efficacy, not the effectiveness, the efficacy of the influenza injection by doing more exercise before or after or on a regular basis to get the immune system to be boosted. They are looking at antibody response rate, which we cannot exactly correlate to effectiveness. It's just a number that we're reading. Does that prove that we're not going to be getting sick, that we're going to have a stronger immune system? We as scientists have yet to understand the mechanisms of immunity and absolutely correlate the antibodies in the blood as an effective preventative, which gets bandied about so glibly in the news. If you listen to the Health In Show with Dr. Bruck, which we did earlier in the month, he explained how primitive viruses and bacteria have a survival mechanism. With each generation, they will mutate a resistant strain to whatever attack we throw at them. Thus, we must build our own immunity. Unfortunately, the FDA only crowns vaccine the glory to provide this function when we have an arsenal of alternatives like nutritionals, supplements, bed rest, bony broths that's shown from the Weston Price website, vitamin D and other supplements, in addition to creating healthy environments and improving relationship dynamics, and also our sanitary practices, which I've mentioned already, about washing and not building up resistant strains through the overuse of antibacterials. Dr. Tony Bark, and I'm going to just check in here with the guests who are listening. If you have any comments or questions, Or if you want to call in, you can call in and talk to me. This is an open chat. Call 347-945-6956 if you're in the United States, or click into that blue Skype button, and I'm happy to have a conversation with you. Okay, so right now we're just talking about this influenza and building up our immunity. And there is an article of that she asked us to take a look at. It's an abstract, Influenza-Induced Innate Immunity. The influenza virus infections usually cause mild to moderately severe respiratory disease. However, some infections, like those involving the avian H5N1 virus or the H1N1 virus, can cause massive viral pneumonia, systemic disease, leading to death. The innate immune response of respiratory tract resident cells is the first line of defense and limits viral replication. How many people are eating garlic? How many people are drinking lemon juice or other kinds of natural home remedies that can improve your immune system? How many people are cutting out sugar that feeds on all of these diseases? Enhanced cytokine and chemokine production following infection appears to underlie much of the pathology that develops after the infection with highly pathogenic strains. So these are key, the cytokine and chemokine production following an infection. These are called cytokine or cytokine storms and can damage the lung tissue and cause systemic disease despite the control of viral replication. So they're saying that we can stop the virus from replicating, but what about the damage from the cytokine storm? By summarizing current knowledge of the innate responses mounted to influenza infection, this review, and it's an abstract on, tell you what publication, it's the PubMed. It can be found on PubMed, this article. By summarizing the current knowledge of the innate responses mounted to influenza infection, this article highlights the importance of the respiratory tract epithelial cells as regulators of innate and adaptive immunity to influenza virus. My question: will the influenza vaccine improve the innate and adaptive immunity in the respiratory tract to the influenza virus? So the cytokine and chemokine storm leads to a large influx of inflammatory cells into the respiratory tract in an attempt by the immune system to control the viral infection, by which instead causes collateral damage to the lung tissue and inhibits oxygen exchange in the alveoli, and that's in the bronchi, in the lungs, meaning that you're not able to breathe if there's no exchange of oxygen. All of that technical jargon is telling us that it's an inflammatory response of the body. And when they say that doing exercise is going to the muscle tissue, is going to increase the inflammatory response of the body. It's going to bring that. It's when people say that they have fibromyalgia or other kinds of diseases or arthritis, it's inflammation to the tissue. Inflammation and fever are the ways that the body is attempting to heal itself from an attack, from an outside invasion, of virus or chemical or bacterial or fungal entities that enter the body. Anything that's alien to the body, they're going to have an immune response of inflammation. That's how they say that the influenza or other kinds of injections, vaccines, are work by stimulating an inflammatory response of the body. So what this seems to say is that the body offers up a defense mechanism of inflammation, which antibodies will not allay. So what's the story here? We're giving a vaccine, and then a person will just, because it's only 50 to 70% effective, and those numbers you can take or leave based on what we discussed a little earlier about how information is gathered and how all respiratory ailments are documented and clumped into one group as influenza instead of separating out, because not everybody gets a swab and is tested, but they say they have the flu. So in fact, I wonder if the antibiotics that are given after a person comes down with a secondary infection will cause more damage and more rapid demise of the person, because they're already in a weakened state of being. And it's this inflammatory cellular response that has prevented them from being able to breathe properly and get the oxygen necessary for the body to function. So by giving antibiotics, you might be doing more harm. What can you do? Perhaps antioxidants plus vitamin D, and Dr. Tony Bark says possibly steroids to reduce the inflammation will assist the patient to get over that crisis period and overcoming the attack to the body. So that is something that the doctors might be wanting to look at, using steroids or thinking preventatively, or maybe even after you get the influenza infection, the vitamin D and all the other supplements that we know can help boost the immune system. One might question the influenza study goals, their hypothesis, and their methods. Dr. Tony Bark tells us that the only flu vaccine study that showed a positive outcome for the flu vaccine used a placebo. And, you know, I mentioned the methods of using these kinds of studies, and in this particular study, the one study done for influenza, the placebo was not a saline solution. It was a combination of three different vaccines, whereas the people getting the one flu strain was not a mixed vaccine. The outcomes were measured by how many hours each group reported having a fever in a prescribed period of time. So my comment to that is, as far as I know, we do expect fever to indicate an immune response. In addition, part of the protocol in some clinics, we request to take down the fever with Tylenol or other drugs. And this is something that is commonly told to a parent whose child is getting their regular immunizations, that you can expect to have a fever, you can expect to have swelling at the injection site, you can expect to have inflammation, because that's how the body responds. And then they will tell the parent to give the child Tylenol or some other fever reducing remedy, medicine. And this is a negation of what you're asking the body to do. So not only would it mask the immune response, it will force a chronic autoimmune reaction in the individual. So maybe this is where we would hear the never well since. I never was well since that flu that I incurred how many years ago. we can question why a placebo did not consist of the saline solution instead of the more virulent concoction of viral agents. Nowhere was influenza ever documented, nor were patients examined. The placebo group had approximately 10 hours more of fever for this time period than the flu vaccine recipients in the study, the one study on influenza. So, meaning that the group, the placebo group that got the vaccine of many different drugs at once or viral agents at once had a longer fever response, which can be expected for any trained pediatrician, nurse, pediatrician, or plain old parent. We know that children receiving three vaccines or more at once are expected to mount a febrile response, says Dr. Tony Bark. So what does this tell us? They're saying that I'm wondering what the conclusion is from this type of a study, that if the fever lasts longer in the placebo group, does that mean that the patients are getting a higher immunity, a higher antibody response, more prevention of flu in the future, or what? I'm not exactly sure, and that's for you to investigate and try and find out what you think the conclusion should be. Now, natural preventatives that are recommended by Tony Bark in her article, she says, quote, "What I can recommend for this season of viral illnesses is to be sure to you are taking approximately 50,000 IUs of vitamin D weekly for the average slim adult and up to 70,000 IUs of vitamin D weekly for a larger, bigger adult. Children need their dose titrated from 50,000 IU for an adult weighing around 130 pounds. So we could probably search around the internet and find out more information about the exact amount of vitamin D that's most recommended and how many pills that would be per day. I'm not sure, but one thing that you can do is go outside and get 15 to 20 minutes of sunshine on your arms and your face every day. The homeopathic remedies for influenza are many. Early on, everybody knows that Eupatorium perforata, which is for bone pain, severe chest pain, having to sit up. Oh, wait a minute. Early on with aches and pains is Eupatorium perforata. So that's the one that we typically call bone break, and it's used for many other kinds of infectious diseases. If you have severe chest pain and have to sit up so that you don't cough or bring up mucus, you're considering the homeopathic remedy bryonia, because that person who needs bryonia does not like to move. Any kind of movement is painful. Therefore, they sit up so that they won't cough, because the jolt of coughing is way too painful. And when they cough a real lot, the ribs begin to hurt. Then we have another type of remedy called Nux Vomica for spastic coughing and a headache. The person has a lot of irritability and gagging with the cough. And so those are a couple of remedies for influenza remedies, and I can give you even more of those. Aconite is useful in the sudden onset of the influenza with great anxiety and fear. The individual experiences a high fever, usually coming on at night, a dry cough, a sore throat, and feeling of great worry and fear with restlessness. It sounds a little bit like arsenicum, does it not? The typical symptoms occur, this is one of the keynotes, after exposure to dry, cold wind, or even from an emotional alarm or a fright. So aconite, we know, is good for after an earthquake or a trauma. It really is a shock to the system. The patient always feels better with fresh air and feels worse in a warm room in the evening or at night while lying on the left side. And you would really have to be observant to pay attention to the sick person in the bed, that they're worse on the left side, therefore they would probably be lying on their right side. And now I'm comparing it to Arsenicum album. Influenza in children that occurs at a sudden onset with much prostration, the same as aconite, is a sudden onset. And we know aconite is also good for croup. Now we're on to Arsenicum album. The flu might be caused by a gastric derangement. That means diarrhea, vomiting, upset tummy. The patient is extremely restless and oversensitive. They're anxious and weak. They want somebody to be by their side at all times. They don't want to be left alone. Their face appears pale with an anxious expression. The burning pains are common for a person who would do best with Arsenicum album. Plus, they like a warm application. That will make them feel better. So when you get out that hot bottle warmer and put it on, or a wet hot washcloth on them, their chest or their head or their back, that's going to make them feel a little bit more comfortable. The application will comfort them, but you need to, for those who are using homeopathic remedies, Arsenicum album will be the one to choose. They are typically thirsty for small, cool drinks of water, and their worst time of day is at 1 and 2 in the morning. They have the vomiting and the diarrhea, which may come on simultaneously, and that, as I said, the keynote is burning, so the diarrhea is acrid, offensive, and can even be like watery stools. Another remedy for influenza is baptisia. In this case, again, the flu comes on suddenly, which typically we think of flu coming on suddenly. In most all cases, do we not? The ones that come on slower maybe would be gelsimium. But the flu comes on suddenly and is again associated with a high fever. In this case, the person feels bruised on their body. The patient has a certain appearance of drowsiness. They almost look as if they are drunk if you look at their eyes and their complexion. They have profuse sweating with this high fever and an intense thirst. And the bed to them feels hard. I believe arnica also feels as if the bed feels hard. But for a flu, baptisia feels the bed feels hard. And in that case, you might see that they are restless and constantly moving. The flu is associated with a stupefying headache with confusion. And the fever is associated with a delirium with strange sensations, as if there is somebody else in the bed with him, or that the parts of their body are feeling separated. And so if you hear them speaking in their delirium, they might say something like, I can't get the parts of my body together, or is there somebody else is in the bed with them? And that's quite unusual and would definitely be a key to selecting baptisia. And I mentioned the bryonia. With a sudden, this one is a slow onset. So you can compare the sudden onset of aconite, arsenicum, and baptisia to the slower onset of bryonia, which has a severe throbbing headache and those body pains. There is a dryness of the mucous membranes and stitching tearing pain. So Arsenicum has burning pain, and bryonia has stitching, tearing pain, worse from any type of motion. They have a fluent coryza, so the watery nose is, or a greenish discharge is coming from the nose, and they have that dry hacking cough. For the persons who love to smoke, the smoking is going to be aggravating to them, and also they can be worse from just simply talking. They have in comparison to arsenicum, which likes small little sips of cool water, the bryonia person is going to glug their water down. They want large amounts, but infrequently, and they prefer their drink cold. The pains that they have feel more comfortable with pressure. And so you're going to notice the pressure, the reason that they like pressure is it stabilizes them. It prevents motion. They're worse from motion. So that's why they may stay in one place in the bed and not move. They may not even open their eyelids because it hurts so much to move any part of their body. And that is why you might see them lying on the painful part. So if they're lying on the side of their body that hurts, it's because they don't want to move and they're applying self-pressure, which is different from the other one where I mentioned aconite, which is worse lying on the left side. So that's quite a bit of information about bryonia. They are sleepy, heavy, lethargic, also irritable, like the other one was irritable. A lot of them are irritable. We know Nux vomica is irritable. So this one is also is feeling irritable. That is bryonia. That's why sometimes we call bryonia the bear in the morning. They want to be left alone. Another really great homeopathic remedy for influenza. First one was mentioned is called Eupatorium perfilatum or perfiliatum, is said to be the principal remedy for intermittent fevers when the Indians of America used it. It is common name is called boneset from the prompt manner in which it relieves pain in limbs and muscles that accompanies the influenza. Again, another sudden onset type of attack with violent aching pains in the bone, almost as if the bones feel as if they've been broken. Again, a high fever, but this is preceded by chills, especially, and we like to look at the time of day, from 7 until 9 in the morning. And the chills will run up and down the spine. And this also, I recognize, gelsemium also has chills running up and down the spine. But they are, even though they're chilled, the Eupatorium perf likes to have ice-cold water. So you can see that we're looking at amount of thirst, time of day when they're worst, whether they like to be still or have movement, whether they like to be comforted by other people or left alone. Here we have gelsemium as another influenza remedy. This tends to be a number one flu remedy also. I personally have used it when you have all of the messages in the media, fearful messages about the highly contagious epidemic going on, and so you might be afraid to travel, to go in an airplane where diseases are easily spread, to go into crowds. You might feel just anxious all over about fearful and anticipation about illness and disease. So gelsemium is really a great remedy, but the difference is it has a slow onset. Again, associated with the chills running up and down the spine, a lot of tiredness and paralytic weakness. The chills begin in the hands and feet, and they do run up and down the spine. One of the things that I learned about gelsemium is that when you notice that chills doing that, and you then have to urinate and go to the bathroom, you feel much better from urination. That's a real interesting, unusual symptom that you know would tend to tell you, look at the gelsemium as your remedy. These patients feel as if they are run over by a truck, so they're really aching. They're feeling really hurt. Their muscles hurt. They experience a lot of trembling of the limbs with lack of muscular coordination, and they want to lie down and be left alone, similar to the bryonia patient. The patient is worse in the early morning and at the last thing at night. So those are your keynotes for gelsemium in influenza. Another great remedy is phosphorus. The flu quickly affects the lungs, especially the base of the right lung. There is dry, tickling cough with a tightness across the chest. The time of day is worse in the evening and worse before midnight, whereas the arsenicum was worse after midnight. One of the things about phosphorus most homeopaths and people know who study homeopathy is it's known for bleeding. Therefore, you might see blood in the discharge, a bloody sputum, which is bright red. Again, this is another patient that craves cold drinks, the same as Eupatorium perfilata and bryonia wants cold drinks. So those are things that you can remember. The patient who drinks this their cold drink, and as soon as it gets warm in their stomach, who then promptly vomits, again, think about phosphorus. They have burning pains also, which is similar to arsenicum, and they have a constriction in their chest. We know phosphorus is a very excellent lung remedy, respiratory ailment remedy. They are worse lying on their left side, which is similar to the earlier one I mentioned. I think that was Eupatorium. So you're going to look all of these things up in your repertory and put together an analysis so that you can separate all of these things. It was aconite was worse lying on the left side. So then you're going to differentiate between the aconite, which is a quick onset also remedy, and phosphorus, worse on the left side for coughing. This remedy is also useful with nasal bleeding, which again, look at bright red color, coughing, worse talking, and also worse laughing. I'm going to mention three more remedies. We have rhus toxicondrin. This is a remedy used most usually for something like shingles, rashes, urticaria, poison ivy. But it's also good for headaches and flus and colds, especially after the person has become wet. They've gone out and they've gotten caught in a rainstorm, and then they come in and that night they come down with a headache, stiffness, restlessness in the joints. We know it is the number one arthritis homeopathic remedy. So you're going to feel it in the joints. So the exposure to wet, damp weather is going to make you think about rhus toxicondrin, also sitting on a wet ground. There is stiffness, and the stiffness is usually worse upon first movement. But then when they, you know, you might see them doing shoulder rolls or moving their limbs about, because the more they move them with the continued movement, they're going to loosen up and feel a little bit better. But then again, the stiffness is going to settle into the joints again as the day wears on. There would be an intense fever. And again, this person has thirst. We've got quite a few of the influenza remedies you would see the keynote, thirst. The one that we think of as not thirsty is pulsatilla. But in most other cases, we're thinking, what kind of thirst is it? Is it for great draughts of water, then you're going to think of bryonia. If it's small sips, you're going to think of arsenicum. But then rhus tox is also thirsty. There is tremendous prostration and severe aching in the bones, similar to Eupatorium perf. Extreme restlessness. This is going to give you a real clue if that person is extremely restless, constantly changing position, and great apprehension at night. They're so apprehensive and so uncomfortable and restless at night in the bed that they usually will get up and start moving around. They cannot stay in the bed. The next remedy is influenzinum, and the last two I'm going to mention is just nosodes. So this nosode influenzinum can be taken, and you know, we've been talking this entire hour or so about preventative, and we're going to have a huge show on homeoprophylaxis coming up next Monday on the Health In show with Kate Birch and Scylla Watcott, because that's their whole protocol. That's what they've been doing with immunization for children, using homeopathic remedies as opposed to vaccinations. And I want to remember and remind people who listen to this show that this is educational broadcasting. We're just learning together. I'm not diagnosing. I'm not prescribing. Homeopathy World Community does not do that. What we do is we are creating waves of awareness. We're creating information for you to broaden your horizons, to learn about homeopathy, to do self-care, to take better steps to improving your health and your immune system. So one of those ways is homeoprophylaxis. We've had many great speakers, Dr. Isaac Golden and Kate Birch, Scylla Watcott, and others, to talk about how to build your immunity, especially in an era when we have so many toxins in our environment that can influence our health. We have been bombarded with all kinds of food products and sodas and sugary things and carbs and white flour and all these different things that's not good for our health. So what steps can we take? Obviously, better lifestyle, better nutrition, whole foods, whole grains. And now we're going to look at the nosodes. Influenzinum is made from the flu virus, and it can be used as a prophylactic during epidemics. Baptisia has also been used for this purpose historically, so that's a very interesting little tidbit of information. The remedy Epidemicus can be found by using the totality of symptoms in several cases of each year's epidemic. And we know that what the pharmaceutical industry tries to do is create somewhat, like they want to make a strain of the virus that they are going to predict and mix up in the lab. They're creating a injection, a vaccine that's supposedly going to be against that seasonal virus. They're not always right. They're mostly wrong. And we know from our study of mutation of viruses and bacteria that they can change very, very quickly over a short amount of time between the time that they develop their influenza vaccine and the virus actually appears on the scene. The virus has already changed. And so where does that leave us? That leaves us with nosodes, homeopathic nosodes, which are constant throughout history. Baptisia can be used as a nosode. Influenzinum, which is made from the year's virus, can be made very, very quickly. So that is called the remedy Epidemicus, genus Epidemicus, excuse me, when we take the totality, excuse me, when homeopaths around the world gather information from patients who have had the flu and have definitely been tested and swabbed, and this is definitely a flu season, and they gather all of the different symptoms and put a conglomerate picture together. Some people might have a high fever. Some people might have a lot of perspiration and chills and sweating. Another person might have a dry fever. Other people might come down with a cough and a sore throat. Some people might break out with a rash or lethargy, or all of the symptoms that we discussed previously in the different types of remedy selections that you would have. And what what are the symptoms that fit the best? And then we would be able to select and say, you know, in my area, bryonia has been working for most of the patients, or nux vomica, or eupatorium perforata. So the arrival of the pandemic influenza would trigger a reaction that would change the world overnight. Many experts agree that the widespread and indiscriminate use of antibiotics has created a time bomb, and that antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria in all likelihood are going to bring about this reemergence of diseases and epidemics. And I want to mention that global warming also probably plays a part in this, because our storms, our hurricanes, earthquakes, and everything else are going to be at traumatic and tragic levels as global warming changes, and so also probably in the increase in epidemic disease. Boy, I've been talking for some time, and so my voice is giving out just a little bit. And I wanted to look up for you the other nosode, which is acylococcinum, and that's the way I pronounce it. I'm not sure how everybody else pronounces it. Some people do the shortened version of acylo, and this also has been used as a homeoprophylactic. And when we talk about that, we might say, well, we know that the seasonal flu is coming up. Let's take a dose of the preventative once a week during the flu season. Okay, and another little tidbit of information that I've been reading and studying is the mucous membranes are the susceptible part of the body where we're going to transmit the disease. That includes the eyes. Now, how many people think about the fact that when you're in a room and somebody sneezes or coughs, your eyes are open most of the time, except when you sneeze. Everybody closes their eyes when they sneeze. I don't know whether they've figured out how that is, but you can't sneeze and keep your eyes open. But that is also a way that the flu can come into the body. So what is acylo? Typically, it is in a 200C potency, and it is coming from the duck, heart, and liver that have been diluted by 100, and the process is repeated 200 times. So it depends. So if you get a brand name from Boron, it is acylo, and it is a 200CK. The 200CK indicates that it is prepared by the Korsakovian method, which means a single vessel is repeatedly emptied and refilled and vigorously shaken or succussed homeopathically by a machine that is calibrated to vibrate 150 times in 7.5 seconds. I don't know whether you knew that or if you even wanted to know that. But so, in other words, this remedy is not hand succussed. This is made by a machine in that laboratory. All of the homeopathic remedies are prepared according to the guidelines listed in the Homeopathic Pharmacopoeia of the United States. So if you see the initials HPUS, you will understand and know what that means. And so acylococcinum is also called Anis barbaria hepatis. And there are double-blind studies using acylococcinum that has been shown to decrease the symptoms of flu for a significant number of patients. A double-blind, placebo-controlled pilot study of 100 patients showed that when given at the onset of influenza-like symptoms, acylo worked better than the placebo in reducing the symptoms of chills, stiffness, and fever. And I want to mention that, you know, when people run to take the Acillo, if you're not having all of those three symptoms of chills, stiffness, or fever, the Acillo may not do anything. Remember, homeopathic remedies work only on matching symptoms. So if you try one of the remedies that was mentioned and it doesn't give you relief, it means that the symptoms were not matching properly. And you might try a different remedy or, of course, always call a professional homeopath. In another double-blind clinical trial of 300 patients with influenza-like symptoms, 55% of the patients taking the Acillo reported no chills after 4 days, compared with 27% of the placebo-controlled group. More patients in the Acillo group also reported no aches after 4 days. 70% were ache-free, compared with 48% in the placebo group. Fever in the Acillo group was significantly lower starting on the first day after the treatment compared to the placebo group. In another double-blind clinical trial of 478 patients published in the British Journal of Clinical Pharmacology back in 1989, researchers studied Acillo's effect on 9 influenza-like symptoms such as fever, headaches, stiffness, lumbar and particular pains, shivers, chills, coughs, coryza or discharge, fluid discharge, and fatigue. The proportion of patients who recovered within 48 hours of treatment was significantly superior among the Acillo group compared to the placebo group. And in 1998, there was another double-blind clinical trial of 372 patients at a German university, and this was giving similar results to the published trial that was done, published in the British Journal of Clinical Pharmacology. Again, the complete disappearance of symptoms after 48 hours, it's 2 days, was significantly higher. And you remember that flu, even though you can, your own immune system can take care of it if you have a strong immune system in 7 to 10 days, fine. But then if you have lingering symptoms, that is where you might need to get some additional healing, because otherwise it might turn into something more chronic, a chronic cough or a chronic coryza. And I want to mention, don't forget chicken soup. Chicken soup is nature's penicillin. And of course, if your mom is taking care of you and helping you out, it always feels better. Don't drink alcohol when you are having the influenza or a cold, because it dries out the tissues in your throat. And what did we just learn about the immune response and the importance of your epithelial cells in your respiratory tract? There's also recommendations from many people to drink vitamin C drinks. Some particularly like orange juice, others like the pure C drinks. Get plenty of rest, and maybe if you're having a fever, a sponge bath will help. I know that I've also taken oregano tincture drops, which they really open up your sinuses and your cavities. That's oregano oil called oregano. And I mentioned not to smoke. It's going to irritate even further and aggravate the tissues in your respiratory system and your mucous membranes. A lot of people like to drink ginger. And this is one of the tricks that I use when I'm making chicken soup, is I put in ginger directly into the broth. Some people like to put in astragalus. That's another good immune booster. And parsley and garlic. So those are all home remedies. Don't forget your regular salt water gargle and your neti pot wash to clear the mucous membranes. And more popular recently has been the zinc echinacea lozenges, because the body is needing the zinc mineral and echinacea, we know that you're not supposed to take long-term, but you can take it short-term to boost the immune system. Don't forget vitamin E oil, olive oil, and some people like to eat coconut oil. So I think I've gone over a good number of remedies. I did not include China and belladonna, drosera, eucalyptus, camphor, arnica. I mean, just the simple arnica might help with aches and pains. Keep a vaporizer in the room to keep moisture in the room. Use saline nose drops to help the nose feel more comfortable. But we went through the main remedies. Nux vomica also, which was not mentioned, would also be a top remedy. So top remedies, Nux vomica, Arsenicum album, Eupatorium perforata, Gelsimium, Bryonia, those are some of the ones that we've gone over. And, you know, everybody has their home remedies, what you do in your culture. I remember as a young girl, my best friend from Baghdad, I went to her house often, and her mom would give us some hot milk with honey and lemon. And so, you know, everyone has their favorite ways of feeling comfortable, feeling nurtured, and boosting their immune system. And I do highly recommend that people do some reading and study what's going on the internet here, because we can gain a lot of information and take care of ourselves in so many different ways. Now I'm going to move along to a special article that's called Teen's Death Shows How Flu Can Kill in a Flash. And this is the media message. We're seeing highly provocative words, kill, you know, and I've spoken about this before, that sometimes words can have certain connotations with them. So we can say people can succumb to a secondary infection. And this is about a young boy who played high school varsity basketball game, and he felt well enough to go to school, even though that's when he started coughing up blood. So if he's coughing up blood, and we just did a little study of remedies, what remedy comes into your mind now when we think about that? I'll give you a moment to think. And you know, I'm also going to relay to you that you can call me at 347-945-6956 if you're in the United States, or you can click the blue Skype button and talk to me there. And so we've just discussed at least 10 remedies dealing with influenza, homeopathic remedies, and lots of home remedies. And now there's this young boy who's typically an athletic type, and he starts coughing up blood. So you're going to think about the remedy phosphorus. Remember, that has bright red blood. So the problem is they took him to the emergency room when this occurred, and 6 days later, the young boy died. And they tell us that he was completely a vibrant 17-year-old boy. And in a week, he passed on. And, you know, we really need to say a prayer for him and think of the devastation to the family that they are feeling. And all of the people, I believe that there was maybe 18 people who have already died from secondary infection, and some of them are younger and some of them are more elderly because of their weakened immune system. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention released this case, and 43% of American children who died from flu, they say, were perfectly healthy. Now, this is very interesting. Remember back in 2009 when the swine flu occurred, they were saying that the young people who were the most healthy were the ones who were getting the flu. Maybe somebody can make some sense of this and talk to me. Tell me, how is this possible? We understand the CDC tells us that cerebral palsy and asthma and other kinds of autoimmune disease or people who have weakened respiratory systems can easily succumb to these influenzas. And that's why they want them to have the flu shot. Remember, what is the percentage of efficacy based on the antibiotic reaction or response that they count? It is worse, they say, the healthier kids die faster, an average of 4 days versus 7 days for kids who had a high-risk condition. I mean, this is perplexing, and we need to investigate what is actually going on. Are these kids just drinking tons and tons of sodas every day? They may be athletes. They may be buddies. But what is their actual lifestyle? I cannot presume. I cannot hypothesize or make guesses. I don't have any facts about these cases. But we do know that eating properly, nutritionally, and boosting the immune system is the best way that we can protect ourselves. It's really, really sad to read these stories. The study did not find a lot of otherwise healthy kids who did have influenza-associated deaths because we know, it says, that deaths can happen fast. And repeatedly in this article, it says prevention is best. And in a turn of the words, best prevention. What is best prevention? Based on the medical profession and the CDC and the government, vaccine, they tell us, is best. Now, that's up to you to decide. Take in the facts after you've listened to this whole show. Think about it for yourself, critical thinking, and decide what is best as preventative. There are two theories about why healthy kids might succumb more quickly. And that's a question that I have. One is that parents of kids with asthma, Down syndrome, or other health problems are already very vigilant, and they're highly familiar with the healthcare system. They seek treatment very quickly once their kid gets a sniffle because they know that's a downward spiral to worse scenario for them. There's also that antiviral drug called Tamiflu, and we're not going to cover that today, whether that helps or it doesn't help. They say that this antiviral drug Tamiflu can help prevent the worst effects of influenza if the patients take it within a day or two of being infected. We're going to have a special show about that. Another theory is that for some reason the immune system goes into overdrive in some healthy children. The doctors call it a perfect storm. And remember, we talked about the cytokine storm earlier in the show. She and doctors, this is Regina Booth, is Austin's mother, the young 17-year-old who passed. She and the doctors did everything by the book, quote unquote. He was one of those kids like everybody liked, that everybody liked instantly, unquote. And he was an honor student and goes on and on about how strong and healthy he was. He was an athlete. Why he would succumb in this way and have it become so sudden, we do not have really an answer. The doctors used sedatives to put the young boy into a medical coma, and they dosed him with, quote unquote, I don't know how many antibiotics, said his mom. Thus, what did they do? They really put his autoimmune system, his immune system, into overdrive. They gave him antibiotics, which we don't know whether he then he was on a ventilator breathing. It turned out he had both influenza strain B and an infection of MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. And what do we know about this? It is easily transmitted in athletic gymnasiums. People who have an infection of MRSA could rapidly be weakened to the point of dying and having their body shut down. We also know that MRSA is easily transmitted and very often transmitted in hospital settings. So we're looking at a complete shutdown of his organs. The boy really did not have a chance. And contributing his death as one to influenza is questionable in my mind. Was there much more going on with his health in the background of this young boy's life? So although the CDC says everyone over the age of 6 months should get a flu shot, they say still most people don't. And I wonder why. Flu kills anywhere between 3,000 people a year to 49,000 people a year. That is a huge spread. But only 51.5% of children aged 6 months to 7 years were vaccinated last year. Just under 75% of babies aged up to 2 years of age were vaccinated. A third of the kids in Austin's age group, 13 to 17, got vaccinated. So the young boy's mom said, "I didn't think he needed the vaccine." So he was one of the people who didn't get the vaccine, and therefore she feels that if he had gotten the vaccine, he would have been safe and protected. Now, whether that is true, you can consider for yourself based upon the facts and the data and what we're being told. So that is basically the news. I so appreciate everyone who has tuned into the show. I hope it has been helpful, informative about influenza today, giving you a wide range of information. I want to mention that on that article, it's an NBC News article about that young boy who was died from MRSA and a weakened immune system and organ shutdown, that 664 comments were recorded about that article, with all kinds of people talking about what they think and what they're doing to take care of themselves. It's very, very interesting, and people have a lot of important information and statistics and data and facts for you to read on that. It's called the health.newsvine.com. I will have the link to that on Homeopathy World Community a little bit later today. So what I want to point out, I want to thank everyone for listening, and I want to point out on Homeopathy World Community, we have a Homeopathy World Community Facebook page. You can join that. I try to put up the links to the shows. You can share it by clicking the share button. You can tweet it on Twitter. There's also a little blue banner on the front page of Homeopathy World Community for a special water called ASEA, A-S-E-A. Redox signaling molecules. And that is another way you can boost your immune system. Not only can you take just a capful twice a day, you can put it in a spray bottle and spray your skin, your face, to rejuvenate yourself. It is basically NaCl. It is saline solution that has undergone a special patented process. No other manufacturer makes it. This is a patented process that stabilizes the redox signaling molecules. With many thousands of research papers learning about redox signaling molecules as the molecule in your cells throughout your body that keeps you alive, that helps your immune system to repair and heal all of your cellular structures. What happens in the body is the redox signaling molecules are only there temporarily. They're unstable. They either are actively working or they disappear. They are not there anymore. And what this patent pending project has done is it's actually patented. It's not pending. It is a patenting process that stabilizes these molecules. We have a lot more of the redox signaling molecule as we are an infant and in our younger years. And as we age, we have less of them. So what this does is bring it into the body. And I myself am taking this ASEA water, and I see some improvement with my ability to retain energy, to go on every day. So other people are seeing health improvements with the ASEA water. We also are going to have the guest on Monday with the Health Inn, Kate Birch, and you can take a look at her book, The Solution, called Homeopathic Prophylaxis, the Vaccine Alternative. And we also have the Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy. This is a computer program, the one that I prefer to use. It is updated on your computer automatically whenever they do improvements to the or additions to the repertories to the Materia Medica. It's a fantastic tool for anyone in a health profession. If you're a homeopath, a student of homeopathy, if you are a nurse or a physician, the Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy, you can see the link directly on Homeopathy World Community. And we also have the show tomorrow with Alan Phillips and Greg Glazer, constitutional lawyer, at 12 noon to 1 p.m. tomorrow. That's Thursday. And we're going to be scheduling some more shows with Dr. Christina Shambro, veterinarian, who did a long-term series with us last year, and she's going to come on again. Kavitha Kukunur is an inspirational author. She's going to talk with us sometime this year. She just came back from India from visiting her family and giving some presentations. And don't forget, Dr. Adil will be back with us in February. We have 48 archive shows of him on Blog Talk Radio. And I want to thank everyone again for sticking out, being with me. I'm going to close the show. And please send comments, send feedback to me. I'm so pleased that we had so many guests today who listened in. Thank you. Waves of Awareness. Love to everybody.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.